It's been some time since I've had a chance to see my friend Shauna Green, at the head coach at the University of Illinois, but that's because she's so busy winning, she doesn't have time for anybody like me. Coach, it's so great to see you.
Oh, thanks, Debbie. I appreciate it. And yeah, I mean, I watch your stuff all the time. So super excited to be on with you, and I appreciate you having me.
Well, you're a builder. You're somebody that has gone through the process. You've gone brick by brick to put it together at Illinois. Tell us a little bit about what your journey's been like.
Yeah, it's you know, going on year four, and in a way it seems like it's been like in a blink. In another way, it seems like it's been, you know, 10 years. So it's just been an awesome process, right? And when I took the job, obviously the program was not in a good place. A lot of my colleagues, even some of my friends, kind of questioned what I was doing, you know, leaving a place like Dayton and coming to try to take this on. But when I see something and I believe in the people, I believed in our administration and I believed in, you know, obviously the Big Ten Conference, but more importantly, the people here at Illinois and what they wanted this program to be and their resources and what they're put into it. I really believed it was kind of a hidden gem, and I thought that we could really do something special here. So it's been a process. It's been, like you said, brick by brick, but it's about the people. It's about establishing a culture. It's getting unbelievable, you know, kids that believe in a vision, and we've been able to kind of change it pretty quickly. And hopefully here it's just, you know, we're not satisfied. We have a long ways to go. A lot of things we haven't accomplished yet.
The league is a monster. every night there is a challenge, and it's a different challenge. It's not all the same styles. It used to be very similar style of play. It seems to be a lot different now. How do you think it's changed over the years?
Yeah, and even, you know, I'm from Iowa, so growing up in Big Ten country, I've watched it my entire life. You are spot on. This league, number one, I mean, it is an absolute gauntlet. Like, in every night, it's something different, right? So you have a pressing team, or you have, you know, like you get your Ohio States, your Michigans, your Michigan States that are just constantly on you. Then you have your UCLAs that present a million problems. I mean, I could go on and on. It's just literally everyone's different. You have unbelievable coaches. I think some of the best coaches in the country. You have, you know, match that with elite players, and then you match it with different styles. It's hard to prepare for. And you only have, it's not like you have, you know, all these 3-4 day prep. You're working on 2 day prep almost the entire season. So a lot of challenges, but like myself and our players and most people in this league, it's why you come to these places, because you want to compete against the best of the best.
When I look at the Big Ten and the coaches, if you go down the roster, I think every coach in the Big Ten has been at a mid-major or a smaller level first, where they could learn, figure out the things that work, validate their existence at the high level with the teaching and the strategies and all the preparation that comes with it. Why do you think that is such an important step for all those young coaches that are out there that can't wait to get where you are?
It's really interesting, because I never thought about it until you just said that. And I can just think off some on the top of my head, and it's so true, right? I just think for me, I mean, I started at the very bottom. I started at Division III as an assistant coach, and I was an admissions counselor in the morning and basketball coach in the afternoon. So, I mean, it was the bottom of the bottom of the bottom. But I'm so grateful for my journey, because you learn so much along the way, right? And you know, I've been an assistant a long time, and then obviously was a head coach at Dayton, and now have an opportunity here in the Big Ten. But I just think that for all the young people, it is a process. And I always, like, make the big time where you are, right? And really just, like, buy into to being present and being the best in that moment. I always believed if you did the work and you did things the right way and you treat people the right way, then people are going to notice, and you'll get opportunities that are going to come without you looking for them. And I think so many people nowadays are always searching for the next best thing, instead of just locking in and being where your feet are and trying to be elite in that day, right? And then day after day, and keep stacking them. And then I think I'm a big believer in, you know, the process, and then the outcomes come. And I think it's the same thing in this coaching world. Like, you do the right thing, you present yourself and you work your butt off and you treat people right, you're going to get some opportunities. But shoot, don't just keep searching, and that's not what you work for. You know, remember your why.
I want to share a short story, and I'm not going to tell the whole story, because this is a personal moment that you and I shared at an event that Dayton played in. It was our Gulf Coast Showcase down in Florida. And that particular year at Dayton, you went 0-3 in our event. You ended up winning the A-10, but you went 0-3. And I saw you after you had lost the third game. And you were not in a good place. And I remember saying to you, whatever I said to you, but watching you now and seeing how you've taken your great passion and shared it with your players, how you've worked so hard to make this Illinois a spot where people want to come and watch, want to see your team play. When you go back and you mention D3 and you think about all the experiences that you've had, how do you feel right now about where you are with your team, your program? Are you on schedule or are things going your way?
It's funny, Debbie, you mentioned that because I remember that moment perfectly. And thank the Lord, like you were just there. And I think I remember.
I saw you out. I went looking for you.
Well, for me, it was like a divine intervention because I needed that, right? It was a hard time and I needed some positive words and it helped me tremendously. And I think it's just, again, just, you know, staying in the moment, right? Whether you're coming off three losses or whether you just beat a top 10 team, like you just can't get too high or too low. And you got to and that's something that's easier. It's still hard, but as you get older, I think you can get in a little bit more experience. You get a little bit better with it. But yeah, it's the same thing here. We've had really high times. We've had some, you know, some really tough times. And but just staying present, remembering why we do this, I think is really, really important because there's so much pressure. There's so much, you know, on the line, but you just got to stay present in your core values and in your kids. And trying to help them and through this journey and through this process. So in terms of where we're at, you know, again, I'm a competitor. I'm never happy. I'm never satisfied. But when I do stop and reflect on being here three seasons and going to 2 out of 3, you know, NCAA tournaments, winning the WBIT championship, first championship of all time in Illinois, you know, we hadn't been into the NCAA tournament when I got the job for 20 some years. Last year, winning a game in the NCAA tournament, which we hadn't done in 25 years, bring in the 7th, 8th best recruiting class. We have to be really proud of where we've come. And I think I tell my kids this all the time because they're never, you know, that we win and they're always so hard on themselves. And I'm like, guys, you take a minute and give yourself a little credit. I think it's just so the pressure, everything. We want to be this, and that's great because that's why we're elite and they're elite competitors. But like, take a moment and give yourself a little pat on the back, and then let that motivate you, you know, to work even harder. So, are we where we want to be? I mean, we want to compete for championships. We want to make deep NCAA tournament runs and eventually compete for a national championship. And people can call me crazy. That's fine. You know, that's what we want. So. I'm happy where we're at, but we're going to continue to work our butt off every single day to be elite in everything that we do.
I think everyone thought Kurt Cignetti was crazy too. So the Big Ten coaches to me, always seem very connected, like are for the greater good of the game. Like you could pluck one of you out and ask you a question, and I think you would all have a very similar response when it comes to where the game needs to go. What are the best practices? What are ways that we can advance? How can we keep getting people to come to our games? How much of a role has the Big Ten Network or the unity of your coaches played in helping advance the game in the Big Ten?
I think you're right. That's something that I, you know, recognized right away. Obviously, you know, a lot of these coaches just from being on the road and obviously being in this game, but we really are. I think it's something really special that obviously when we're competing against each other, we want to kick each other's butts. But then after that, like we want our league to excel. We want the game to excel. And we have some, you know, really amazing people that are, you know, we're all out there, but some are at the forefront of it. And you look at the attendance across the board in the Big Ten. I mean, I think it has to be one of the highest in the country. Every place we go, you know, we're seeing full arenas or, you know, 8, 10 plus thousand. And that's what's special about this. And then you just talk about the play. I mean, the play has elevated in a way that people, you know, want to watch these teams play and watch this game. So I think the collective effort between coaches, the brands that we're presenting, what we're putting out there, the fan bases that we have in the Big Ten, they love sports and they come out and they support. And that is everywhere we go. And it, that's important, right? Like, yeah, you want to sometimes like, oh shoot, we got to play in front of 15,000 on the road. I'd rather have that any day than playing in front of 500, right? And I remember that Dayton, like we got great crowds and some of those road games, there wasn't hardly anyone there and it was hard to play. So I'd rather play in that. That's what this is about. It's promoting and these women deserve to be seen and have all this support. So I think we're just at an amazing time and just very grateful to be a part of such an amazing conference.
I think that attitude is the attitude that most coaches have, even though it could be a tough, hostile environment. You'd rather go into a place that has fans that care and hope that you get good officials on the road and, and that you can at least, you know, do your thing.
That's the biggest key right there, but we won't talk about that. No, that's a whole other podcast.
Listen, I don't want to get in trouble with that either, because trust me, I have my own issues and I get in trouble with the officials too. So don't think that, you know, coaches are the only ones. I'm going on February 12th to the NCAA to participate in their mock selection process. So this is a process where they're going to take us through how they seed and select. It's invitation only. Kind of surprised I got an invite, to be honest with you, but I got an invite and ESPN is allowing me to go. If you were sitting in my seat, what would be a couple of things that, you know, anonymously a coach would want to know about the seating and selection process?
That's a good question.
You can answer now or you can call me later. Either way, I'll take your.
I want to think about that because I want to just say something. Yep. There's so many things on my mind that I would, you know, there's just so many different factors. Does this really matter? Does that really matter? You know, I think just the scheduling piece too, like it's interesting to me, like, you know, like you see teams that don't really play that hard of a schedule and non-conference beat people by so much. So then they're net so high early on. And then, but like, so what, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know net's very valued, but
I know what you're saying.
Are you going to be rewarded for beating teams by, you know, 50? Or are you going to be rewarded by going and maybe losing a couple games, but they're hard? So I just think there's so many, again, that I have so many thoughts on that. So I may hit you on the side with that.
You can hit me on the side. I know as of the time of our taping, the Big Ten has more teams in the top 65 in the net than any other league. And UCLA has the most quad one wins. It's going to be really interesting to see how all that plays out. I mean, that is probably going to be one of our top conversations. And I don't even think that's a big deal, but it is a big deal for seeding. Yeah. Which side of the bracket you're on, whether it's UConn, UCLA, if they remain a one seed. UConn is clearly I think they're going to be undefeated before we get to the tournament.
I think that's a big piece, right? The seeding. I think that's because seeding is just absolutely critical. And I think that's like, yeah, how does all that weigh in and how do they really, when it comes down to it, what are those factors that decide that?
Yeah. Okay. So the net, do you have any idea what's in it, how it's orchestrated, what variables go in? It's one piece of the criteria. Do you have a clue?
They break it all down for us. We looked over at, you know, the Big Ten meetings and our spring meetings, they kind of, you know, break it down. At the end of the day, I try to play what makes sense for our schedule, like our team each year. I've always done that and try to play the best, you know, in that. And then I think it is different though. I think you got to try to go out. It's different than when 5 years ago when, okay, we're up 10 at the end of the game and I'm going to get my starters out. And like, I now think about beating people. If you're up, like winning as much as you can. So now I'm keeping people out there and that's different than what I used to do.
Sure. I've got a solution for it. I wrote it. I'm going to send it to you, but basically it's called the walk-on metric. Seth Davis allows me when I can, you know, write something. And so I came up with what I call the walk-on metric. Now, my youngest son was a walk-on at Louisville last year, and Pat Kelsey tried his best to get the walk-ons in. And I know that because of the net efficiencies, everybody's worried about three possessions at the end of the game where you go down, you turn it over, you come down and give up a layup, you come down and you give up, you shoot and miss. Okay. So three possessions. So what we came up with is eight games, maybe, that you would put your walk-ons in, or the end of your bench that doesn't get a lot of time. Eight games times three possessions is 24 possessions. At the end of the season, when you look at the total number of possessions, it's like 0.011578 affecting the net. Well, I'm sure you have a second bench, you know, coaches on the first bench, your analytics people on the second bench. There's no reason why they can't track those possessions, submit it in a form, send it to the NCAA, subtract 0.011875, whatever. And that way, the one true traditional part about college basketball that we have always loved, because it connects the student body with the students, right? Because it's one of yours. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a kid that everybody loves. This is a dream. Yes. For my kid, it was a dream to play, right? This is his team. He grew up loving Louisville. He just wanted to be on the team. And he was an undersized point guard, having to guard Chucky Hepburn every day. And it was a great experience for him. But he didn't get to play in the games. Okay, so fine. You know, it's okay. But it is a problem for coaches, because when they're in the stands chanting, Jonna, Jonna, and you're listening and you're going, oh my gosh, I got to put my kid in because the fans want my kid in. But she's going to turn it over three times, right?
Yes.
Okay. It's an issue. It's something. It's really something to think about. And I had this conversation with Corey Close. The other part of it is football allows you four games and you don't lose your eligibility. I really think we need to come up with some way to solve this. There's two answers right there. We just gave you two answers to playing kids that don't get to play. That work just as hard and give everything that you ask them. They do everything. They do extra probably.
Yeah.
Just something to think about. What do you think about all that?
No, I mean, I agree with you, because I think that would be, you know, that would be a way. Because I, you're always trying to search for those moments. Those kids are so important. Like, they literally, every single person went through 15 on our team. And sometimes those guys that don't get in as much are the most important pieces, because they can affect so many things.
Sure.
And so I think that that's a great idea about the you know, taking those times and sending them into the NCAA and the, you know, and that. And I also, with the eligibility, like football does it, I think that that should be something. I would be for that.
Yeah. It's something to think about. I think there's, you know, we constantly have to be thinking about changing. We can't stay the same.
Exactly.
I'm always trying to think about what would be good for the game, good for the coaches, you know, something that helps somehow.
And good for, you know, good for every single person on your team. And I mean, that's what this is about.
Yeah. I was studying something about time of possession in basketball, and about 92% of your backcourt. So 92% of the possessions that you have, time of possession for the ball in the hands of your backcourt players is like 92% of the game. So less than 92%. So what are you doing the other, you know, like the 8% that you have the ball in your hands, what are you doing the other 92% in the game? It's really interesting conversation. Like, how do you teach that? Move the ball in a time when people are worried about their numbers,
yes,
their agent, they're worried about their next NIL deal, et cetera.
It's funny, because I just saw that on Twitter, that Billy Donovan.
Yeah, that's where I saw it.
Yeah, so I was just looking at that, and I was actually going to show my team. We're off today, but I'm going to show it to them tomorrow, because I think it goes with a lot of things we talk about and preach every day about, you know, I'm constantly talking about the importance of movement and cuts and pace and speed and spacing, because we get so locked into, the play and who, you know, maybe we have five cuts leading into the what we want, but like those, that what we want doesn't work if you're not doing precise cuts and if you're not, you know, moving without the ball and spaced. And so we're talking about it all the time, but I think it's really hard for you, especially, you know, nowadays with everything that these kids have on their plate and all these outside factors, to get them to understand how important every single aspect of a play is. So I saw that, and I'm like, we are using that. I'm going to show that to them tomorrow, because it's mind blowing, right? 92%. And I think, what was the other one? 95%.
95.
Was, yes, you do not have the ball in your hands. But if you are going to be an elite team, a team that wins consistently, if you, because we talk all the time, it's like, do your job, right? Do your job. And in every moment, every time, whether it's defense or offense, every possession, you have a job to do. And that job during that 30 seconds or however long the possession is, if we don't have five people all connected doing our job at the same moment, then we're not going to be as successful as we can possibly be. So, you know, the buy-in, though, that's easier said than done. And I think that's so we talk, we preach, we hold accountable, we show on film every day. You know, okay, this is what it looks like when we are all doing our job within the possession. This is what it doesn't look like. What are those jobs you have to do? So just continue to teach and show and hold accountable. But I just think when you have another, that's why I saw that. I'm like, I'm showing this because this kind of goes with what we're preaching and what we're trying to teach.
I thought it was amazing. And I'm going to give a shout out to my buddy, Brendan Sir, with Coaching You.
Yeah.
We put that out. Brendan is fantastic. And he really cares about the women's game. He's always trying to help on the women's side as well. So it's pretty cool that everybody is going to start seeing that and start thinking about it because it's going to make our game better.
It really is. And I just think the more people that, you know, I can sit there and say it, right? It's like everything you coach, you know, okay, here goes coach again. But I think when you can bring in other messages and people saying kind of and reiterating the same thing you're talking about and trying to teach, then that's the awesome thing about it. It's the same thing. You know, we were really blessed to have Asia Wilson come to our game and come into our locker room and
saw that.
And for her to share, you know, that message, a lot of the same things that we're trying to, you know, cultivate and teach. And then you have, you know, Asia comes in and she says a lot of the same messaging. And our players, I mean, it hit them. They took that, you know, when one of the best of the best says that. So I just think anytime as coaches and as leaders, we can bring in people that excel or are very successful, you know, to share with our young women. I just think it's so important to do that. So I'm always trying to take other information and learn and then, you know, instill that and put that into our program.
I mean, you know, as a parent, I mean, our kids, I tell my kids, they hear it from me, they hear it from somebody else. It's the same message.
Yeah.
It resonates differently, but Shauna, it is so great to have you on Nothing But Net. We really appreciate your time. And it's great to see you and continue teaching and competing and winning at the highest level like you've been doing.
Thank you so much, Debbie. I appreciate it.
Shauna Green, the head coach at the University of Illinois. Coach, thank you so much.
Thank you.